on radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial President, Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Monday edition of InvestTalk. It's May 18th, 2015. We're heard on radio, streaming live on InvestTalk.com and in podcast form for folks all around the world, listening on their own schedule. And thanks to our subscribers, we're counting nearly about 4 million podcast downloads now. We appreciate your interest, and we're pleased that you take the time to listen to the show. We really do appreciate it. Our main purpose is always to provide a learning experience for our listeners. We have this hour each day to answer questions and bring some information that I and Justin think are important and useful to you, the listening audience. Another way we can address some of the important financial topics is through our Saturday Morning Wealth Conference and our live webinars. And we have one of those coming up next month, live webinar, on the evening of June 4th. Now, what we're experiencing today is an overpriced U.S. stock market. And just as U.S. stocks were good buys a few short years ago, today their prices have made them less and less of a bargain. So because successful investors find the opportunities that others miss, we look elsewhere for bargains. There's other places to find them. And we search for opportunities in foreign and emerging markets. That doesn't mean your portfolio shouldn't include domestic stocks. We're not saying that you have to sell your stuff because it might be overpriced, but maybe it's time to mix in some, make a little some adjustments. Mix in a little emerging market stocks, a little European stock. We've been saying that for several months now, and it's turning out to be, you know, a good thing. I mean, it's something that seems to be benefiting a lot of people. The question is, you know, why limit your bargain hunting just here in the United States? It's a world market now. China, Europe, Japan, it's everywhere. The principles of value investing can be applied successfully in all markets. But when you think globally, you have to take certain precautions. There's certain risks out there. You know, currency translations, political risks. There's different kinds of risks. And you've got to factor in global economic changes like quantitative easing. They're doing that in Europe and did a huge thing in Japan. And China's taken some steps, not necessarily quantitative easing, but to loosen up the purse strings a little bit. Again, that's June 4th, 6:30, 7:30 Pacific time. It's free, this webinar. It's free for you. You can get, you can enter our link and be able to sign up. A live webinar. We'll have plenty of time for your questions as well. All right, it's time to hear from you on InvestTalk. So what is your question now? We're open Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 live Pacific time. So give us a call. It's time for you to take a call. Now, let's go ahead and take one from our 24-hour listener line.
Yes, Steve. My name is Rudy, calling from the Inland Empire in California. And I was listening to your Saturday, May 16th show. And you were talking about the dollar being high or low and what's better. And you said that it's better if it's high. Because since we're a consumer-based economy, we want a strong dollar. On the opposite end, if there's a low dollar, who does that benefit? Could you elaborate on that? What's the benefit of having a low dollar? Because I know you said that a high dollar hurts our international business. So just wanted to know what if there is a benefit of having a low dollar value. Thanks.
Definitely. There's benefits for a low dollar as well. Just think about it as simply as, think about it at oil prices. The lower the dollar is, the higher the oil price per barrel will be. The higher the oil price per barrel is, the more jobs you're going to have in the Midwest and the shale formations, hiring people to drill for oil. See, so, and remember, most of our major corporations are international in scope, not just here. So, you know, they want to export. We are a big exporter. Don't think we're not. And so a low dollar will help our exports greatly, and that, again, will produce jobs. So, you know, don't think it's just all one way. It's not. And I was trying to trying to give an idea that the reason why a high dollar is probably better because we're consumer based. 66% of our economy is driven by the consumer and spending by the consumer. And the more they can, the more the things, more things are cheaper, especially foreign goods coming in, the more they'll spend. At least that's the hope, even though the last few months, consumers have been pretty tight on their money. They haven't really been spending all that much. So it's not always a good thing. Okay? It's just not. So let's see. What are we going to talk about today? We're going to discuss. I want to discuss, if we can, various topics of what's going on in the world besides what you see in the headlines with that shooting in Waco. Crazy people. But the market today was up. It kind of tailed off at the very end, but it didn't start off up. It was weak at the beginning of the day. But the Dow ended up being up 26 points. The Nasdaq up 30, and the S&P up 6. So it was the Dow kind of fell off at the end of the day. The Nasdaq held up a little bit better. The Dow and the S&P kind of tailed off toward the end of the day. I think that's pretty good. We're right at new highs here for the S&P 500. So that's surprisingly good in my opinion. Now we still haven't had a decent correction. The last one we had was in October. I don't know if you can call it decent. It was almost 10%. Not quite, but that's a normal correction. 10% is kind of normal. Then before that, you had to go all the way back to summer 2011. 19% correction. So the S&P is not breaking up to new highs with much gusto, but it is doing pretty good trying to break up the new high. Anyways, we're going to talk about investors or traders. Which one are you? Are you an investor or a trader? Most of the really big winners on Wall Street list themselves as traders. Did you know that? But are you an investor and traders? Now, Warren Buffett's an investor. He's not a trader. And that's going to be our main talking point today. We want to. There's a few other things we'll talk about. The scary summer ahead for stocks. By Bank of America's analysts, think it's going to be a scary time. And the AAI, American Association of Independent Investors, are very bearish. And that all by itself is a bullish indicator. And they see Carl Icahn's tweet thinking Apple is going to go 80% higher. Apple computer. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know about that. Proper diversification of portfolio is one of the top guidelines for portfolio management that generally every portfolio manager would agree to. So check out our info sheet on diversification. It's yours free. It's free. You got to be an InvestTalk Insider. InvestTalk Insider, so you have to sign up for that, and all it requires really is your email. And you can get a bunch of these kind of one-page info sheets and access to all our recorded webinars. And, of course, anybody can do it, and it's free. Go to investtalk.com. Well, Justin Usley is here on Mondays, and I'm sure he'll be here, but he's run into some severe traffic, so I had trouble getting here, so I'm filling in for him for the time being. Are you an investor or a trader? And you know the answer doesn't really matter. You can be either or. You can be an investor or a trader. The problem that you run into is when someone acts like they're an investor, but they're really a trader, or acts like a trader and they're really an investor. You have to decide which one you are, and you can separate core holdings as investments and then other stocks as trading, but you don't confuse the two. Now, what is the difference? Well, if you're a trader, would be someone who is looking either at technical or market timing of some kind, which is terrible. Or maybe just that news recently come out on stock and he thinks it's going to be a price movement because of the news or because competition is falling. Or for some other reason other than the basic fundamentals of the stock that you're going to hold on to because of those fundamentals. Then you have to describe yourself as a trader. You know, you're looking for a price movement and you plan on taking advantage of the price movement by buying and selling. That is a trader. An investor is one who looks at the fundamentals of the company and says, this company for a long, long time is a good, solid company, and I'm going to buy it and I'm going to hold it for many months or years. More so years than months. And then when things go wrong is when a person buys a stock as an investment, as an investor, and then pays attention to every wiggle and move of that stock and panics out when it collapses or falls sharply. You're not an investor then. You're a trader. But you say you're an investor. So that is the problem, because people get out at the right at the bottom and they get back in right at the top when they do those kinds of, when that kind of thinking takes over. So don't let that kind of thinking take over your decision making. It's not good for your bottom line. It's not. So decide, and you can be both. I'm not suggesting you've got to be one or the other. You can be both inside a portfolio. Just make sure which stocks is investments and which stocks you're trading. Write it down before you even buy them. And that way you know by looking up, keeping track of that information, that this is an investment and I'm not going to worry about it every wiggle of the market. I don't care. Now, don't save your questions. If you have a question that is about the basics, we're here for you, whether you're an experienced investor or a beginner. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. My name's Parker in San Diego. I'm 23 years old. I listen to your podcast every day. I have about $80,000 in a Roth IRA, and obviously I'm interested in investing. I do have a question when it comes to Social Security in the future. Now, there was a big concern over the Social Security crisis, if there'd actually be that available for people my age in the 4 or 5 decades that precede. But I'm wondering, have we figured that out? Can I rely on the fact that Social Security will still be paying, or is it something that I need to look away from and focus entirely on my own investing? All right, guys, I appreciate the answer, and I look forward to hearing it the next time. Listen. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Well, I cannot envision a future where Social Security will not be available. It will be there, but it won't be there in the same shape, form as we have now. And I think you should act like it's not going to be there, because we don't know. They're going to have to raise the age qualifications. You know, they already raised it from 65 to 66 to 67. They're going to have to go to 70. I don't see how they're going to avoid that. That's going to happen. And they really should index it to your life expectancy and change it accordingly. But it will be there. It may not be there as robustly it is now, but it will be there. And again, act though, save, vest, that you're on your own. Act like that. And then Social Security, whatever it gives you, is fine. Great. Extra. Okay. But too many people relied. It was never designed to be a retirement vehicle. It was always designed to be a supplemental retirement, just to help in retirement, but not to pay, you know, for your retirement life. Never designed that. It's been expanded and expanded and expanded, and that's one of the reasons why it's run out of money. It used to be for people when you retired at age 65, you got Social Security benefits. Now, a lot other, more people get benefits than just people who try at 65. And it wasn't really designed for that. Got to figure that in. Warren Buffett cautions against investing in businesses you don't understand. He says you shouldn't buy stock in companies if you don't understand how they do business. So how do you find out? We're here for you. We're ready to help you. 888-99-CHART. You can reach us right now, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Coming up on the next Invest Talk, it's emerging as an alternative to stocks, bonds, and mutual funds for IRA investors. Can real estate fit into your IRA? That's our talking point for Tuesday, May 19th. We hope you can join us then.
888-992-4278. Don't save your questions. If you have one, give us a call. Or we have a question on the line right now. Or do we have a call, listener line caller? Okay. We're here for you. You can call anytime you want. Beginner experience, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Pete from Anderson, Nevada. Question I have is there anything in the way of a safe or relatively safe distribution from your IRA when you retire? I know it all depends on how risky you want to make things. I used to hear in the past 4%. Recently, I've heard a few people actually saying 3.5%, which seems a little on the low side. And then some have gone as high as 5%. So that's pretty much the question. Can you give us a guideline, one or the other, which way to go? Because I'd like to get some good information up front from you guys. Love your show. Wouldn't miss it for anything. Thanks a lot, guys. This is Pete signing off from Vegas. Take care.
Well, thanks for the question, Pete. The reason why some advisors are saying 3.5 instead of 4 or 4.5 is because of the interest environment we're in. You're getting so little interest rate that they're saying, you know, you got to make it last longer. And to do that, you got to take less because you can't get any return, you know, safe return on safe investments like CDs and money markets, which is all true. But that's not necessarily what you have to do. I think 4 to 4.5%, I think it's fairly safe over the long haul. If you take 4, 4.5, what we're talking about is when you're retired and how much money should you take from your assets to live on? How much of your 401k, your IRA, your invested assets, how much do you need of that cash? How much can you take from that cash and not worry about running out of money? And of course, it all depends on how you invest it as well. I mean, you know, if you invested in the stock market, now you're upping your risk factor quite a bit in retirement, but you'll also get a much higher return probably. So if you want a kind of a combination of risk versus return and try to be, I don't know, somewhat conservative, I still think you can get, you know, 4 to 5% on your money. I do, without taking a lot of risk. Therefore, you can take 4 to 5%, you'll never run out of money. And some years, you know, you'll lose money, and some years you'll make more than 4 to 5%. But and hopefully you'll make more in the years, you know, that soon after you retire, because you want the money to build as fast as you can. But you know, to answer your question, I think 4% is pretty reasonable and fairly safe taken out of your money, and you probably won't run out of money if you're investing it in a reasonable fashion. You probably won't run out of money, okay? 888-99-CHART. Let's talk to Phil in Pleasant Hill. How you doing, Phil?
Fine, thanks, Steve.
Thanks for the call.
My question is, if you delay your Social Security past your full retirement age, does it accumulate at a flat rate of 8% over your base full retirement, or does it compound as you go along?
Now that is a very good question. I'm reading a book called Get What's Yours, Social Security, and when I read that section, I'm pretty positive it just said that you get an 8% increase per year. They didn't say compounded 8% increase, but I would think if I got 8% increase this year, then next year I should get 8% on top of my compounded amount. You know, I'm going to have to look that up, Phil, because I'm not sure. I can see it go either way. My gut feeling is it's compounded, but I don't know that. I'll have to look that up, and I will have that answer for you tomorrow, okay? The book is at the office, and I'm not at the office right now, so that's why I'll look that up. But appreciate it. And that goes 8% per year until you're 70. And you have to start taking at 70. You don't get a choice at that point. Okay? Right. Thanks, Phil.
All right. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the call. And one of the things that people need to pay attention to is you can file for Social Security and suspend the benefits. And then you may be qualified for spousal benefits starting at your full retirement age. That's something that people don't really, that means you get money per month because your wife or husband worked, okay? And you're still getting your 8% compounded on your retirement. till age 70. So you can collect money and still get, you know, compounded increases to your Social Security at age 70. It's called spousal benefits. Did your wife work or your husband work? You know, and it depends on what's their age. I mean, there's different rules and regs, but there's something that's very important to look into. Don't just ignore that. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Before the end of the hour, I really would like to talk about oil prices, and they seem to be bumping up against $60 a barrel. Have you noticed that? Nine weeks in a row gains in oil. But it seems to be having a problem breaking through that $60 area. And does that mean it will fall from that area now? Will we have a pullback? We're going to find out. We'll talk about it a little bit more in the next half hour. A lot of us is avoiding mistakes that come from our own human shortcomings, like lack of patience. A lot of people don't have a lot of patience. The profit that comes from patience. It's coming up next half hour on InvestTalk 101. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and I hope you'll stay with us on InvestTalk. Chart 888-992-4278. Let's talk about oil for a little bit. We all know that oil had a huge run up. What, got up to $145 a barrel a couple of three years ago? And now it's had a pretty big fall for the last, what, 6, 8, 9 months. And in the recent, 9 weeks, it has been slowly rising up to about $60. Okay, so it went down to, did it get to $45, something like that? And now it's back up to $60. And we also all know that supply is not a problem at this point in our economic system worldwide. Part of it is because of lack of strong growth in certain parts of the world. Part of it is we're finding more and more oil, especially here in the United States. And then we got Saudi Arabia and OPEC. Usually Saudi Arabia would kind of try to cut oil production to keep prices up and then increase it when it's needed, Saudi Arabia being the biggest producer out there. But they decided that, no, they're not going to do that anymore because they seem to be losing market share every time they do that. They don't want to play that game anymore. That's what they don't want to do. And OPEC is no longer the quote-unquote, monopoly it used to be, because they don't all agree, those people, members of OPEC. So my question to you is oil going to continue up? Is it going to break above the $60 barrel and go higher? And I would tell you that what you want to be looking at is the dollar. Because the dollar has been falling since March. Almost the same 9 weeks that oil has been rising, the dollar has been falling. If oil has been falling, the dollar has been falling. I'm sorry, dollar fall and oil fall. They seem to be in conjunction. Rising oil. So the question you have here is, we're supply heavy still. We're still supply heavy and demand light still. When demand picks up, then maybe things will change, but that's not what's happening. Will oil go higher than $60 a barrel? Yes, but it's always when. Is it going to go up above it this year? I think it could, and I think it probably will. Because the only reason I say that is because I think Europe is going to gain strength, and parts of Asia are going to gain strength this year, meaning that there's going to be downward pressure in the dollar in relationship to those foreign currencies. And as there's downward pressure in the dollar, there'll be upward pressure in oil prices, really, at some point. Some point that's going to turn, because the dollar goes down, prices of oil will turn around. But the dollar's been going down and oil's been going down. That's going to change. That never stays locked, stepped for very long. It just hasn't. Because oil is traded around the world in dollars. It just is. The cheaper the dollar, the higher the oil prices. That's what is normal. But then you got the supply and demand factor you got to throw in there. You can't just ignore that. I think oil is probably going to go higher, but I don't think it's going to take off this year. You know, I wouldn't surprise me if it hangs around $60 and goes down for a little bit. It wouldn't surprise me. But by the end of the year, I think it'll be above 60. I think it'd be closer to $65, $70 a barrel. That would be my guess. And that is just a guess, everybody. There is no magic in this. Our anytime number is 888-99-CHART. I hope you feel welcome to call if you have a question or a comment. Ready to take another question right now.
Hi there. I was just wondering about investments and taxes. If you sell a stock, I know you have to pay on cost basis and pay your taxes on the gains, but how do you treat the commissions that you might have paid to the broker? Do you get to deduct those, or how do you treat that? That's my question, and thanks for taking it.
Yeah, that's part of the cost of the investment. So you get to lower your cost basis by that cost. Usually it's very tiny. You know, it's not a significant amount, but you can. There's different ways. If you're investing for a living, just like playing poker or something else, gambling, you get to write off certain expenses, okay, if that's what you're doing for a living. But when you're buying an investment, a stock, and it's, you know, and it costs you a trading cost, you get to factor that in as far as your cost basis for that stock. Most people, by the way, don't. They don't. Our anytime number is always 888-99-CHART, but that was a good question. I appreciate it. You can call. You can also see my portfolio checkup dates, by the way, for California. I will be in San Diego County later this week on May 20th. If you're a podcast subscriber and you'd like to take advantage of a free service of taking a look at your portfolio, be happy to do that. You can do that through via Skype or telephone. Just click Make an Appointment on InvestTalk.com.
You have to go where the bargains are. For now, there are more in foreign and emerging markets. Join Steve and Justin June 4th for an InvestTalk webinar, Global Value Investing, Finding Opportunities in Foreign and Emerging Markets. And we'll share an ETF list, too, of foreign markets. And there'll be plenty of time for your questions. Again, it's June 4th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. It's free, but you do need to register. And you can do that now on InvestTalk.com.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. Henning from Ukraine here. I've got a question regarding ticker symbol ECL, Ecola. I am thinking of taking a position for the next 5 to 10 years, and I was wondering whether you could give me a valuation and what you thought of its dividend policy. Thanks a lot, and have a good one. Bye-bye.
Well, this is a pretty big company. It's a $34 billion company. It's Ecolab, Inc. It markets cleaning, sanitizing, pest elimination, maintenance, and repair products to hotels and restaurants. Okay? So it is somewhat cyclical, obviously. It is, the sales growth has been slowly falling the last 4 or 5 quarters. It was before in the teens, and now it was 3 quarters ago, 4 quarters ago, 7% growth, and then 6% growth, and 3% growth. And the most recent quarter, for March, shrank 1%. Shrank. Probably because I would suspect Europe shrinking, having trouble, because I do believe this is an international company. It has to be. They are going to increase their earnings by 8% this year, another 15% next year. So somehow they're increasing their earnings while sales are shrinking. That means they're cutting overhead somehow. They're doing something to achieve that. Good numbers, though. Return on equity is 17%. Cash flow is $7 to pay a 1.1% dividend. On a long-term basis, this stock will do fine. It will do very well over long-term. Short-term, it's having trouble getting above about $117 or so. It's at $115.85 now. And there's strong support coming in about 103 or so, 100 to 103 in that range. For a long-term buyer, this would be fine, but you might want to wait to see if you get a pullback into that low $100 range. Remember, that's about 15%. 115 down to 100 is 15% or so, 14-something. But so you kind of want to buy this, you know, a big blue chip core holding, which it sounds like this is what you want for this one, which makes sense. You kind of want to buy them when everybody else doesn't like them. The greatest time to buy them, of course, is in a recession. Let's go to Art Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you today?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
I don't know. It seems like I'm having a little problem hearing you a little bit. But what I wanted to ask you is, with so many stocks to choose from, how do you go about selecting the one that you know, you're about ready to purchase? Is it by like sectors that are down, or I guess value? You know, when the sectors are down, usually the value is a little bit better. Or how do you go about when you first identify stocks that you want to purchase?
Well, I can't give away, you know, I can't give away secrets, Art, but I will give you a generalized question. You know, different economic cycles has different sectors moving up and down. So, for instance, when you're in an economic cycle that's old and long, as we've been growing for some time, different types of stocks will start to weaken. Okay, when you're in a recession, the stocks that really skyrocket out of recession are usually the high growth tech kind of names, because they're the ones that get crushed just before the recession. So it's an exercise of understanding what sectors move in what part of the economic cycle, trying to determine where we are in the economic cycle, but always, always, always buying good, solid companies that are growing earnings and growing sales. And that changes when you're in recession. Now you're looking at companies that have solid sales growth and potential sales, because recessions usually shrink. But, you know, Art, we have what we call filters. And we use different filters for different parts of the economic cycle to look for stocks. Okay, and they give us a list. We produce lists, watch lists, we call them. And we watch these stocks, the ones we're interested in. And, you know, we go from there. We invest, we then do research from our watch lists.
So do you think we're near the end? I guess the next question would be, aren't we, do you think we're close to the end of this bull cycle?
I think we are way overdue for a big correction. And yeah, I think we're getting close. We're a lot closer to the end of this bull cycle than at the middle part. Okay, because it has been very difficult. It always is to try to guess where and when the top is going to be set in. I can tell you this, Art, the next bear market will probably be accompanied by a recession. And when will we go into recession? I don't see it this year. I don't see it happening this year. I don't.
Okay. All right, thanks a lot, Steve.
Thanks, Art. Now, that doesn't mean we won't have some corrections. Corrections are those things when the market goes down 10 to 20%. A bear market is a 20% or greater fall in the stock market. That's how they're defined, generally speaking. You know what a recession is? 2 quarters in a row of shrinkage in GDP. 2 quarters in a row. We're probably going to have 1 quarter in a row for the first quarter of this year. The first number out was 0.2% growth for the first quarter, but that's going to be revised here, and that probably is going to show shrinkage. That would be my guess, and the reason why I'm guessing that is because we had a lot more import growth and not too much export growth, and that will detract from GDP numbers. But there's a lot of things at work. It's hard to know, but that would be my guess. Time for Invest Talk 101. We have to have patience. Sure, there are times in life when you need to pounce rather than sit back and wait, but there are more times when patience pays off, and that can be very true when you're making investing decisions. The place where I see the most patience needed is real estate. But people think get caught up in the movement of real estate and think they can cash in like it's the stock market or it just can't, like maybe Vegas. You can't. Real estate takes a lot of patience, years and decades. And in the stock market, a slow, steady, and disciplined approach will go a lot farther than trying to decide, pick winners in the last minute, and try to sell them when they're hot, when they rise, and try to pick them when they're low. Using a slow and methodical procedure is what works best. Now, as you've heard, both Justin and I say many times on InvestTalk, you're more likely to get rich slow than get rich quick. There's get rich and quick, yeah, you might hit the lottery. But in the stock market, or investing in general, it's the slow slog. And you can get rich. But you generally won't get rich. If you're looking for that big, 100% rise a week or a month or a year or 2 years or five, it's not going to happen. That's not how it works. It can do that. And then also, as you know, very well know, can collapse too, stock prices. But if you use a good, methodical, patient approach, you'll make money. You'll do fine. Okay, you got to take some risks. You got to take the risks in the market. Understand your risks. Start learning how to manage a portfolio of stocks. You will get there. And that's InvestTalk 101. If you have questions about this topic or any other money matter, it's time to check in now at 888-99-CHART. 888-992-4278.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium newsletter. It comes out each Friday, and one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
Are you saving too much? Are you saving too much? We're coming up on the last segment of the program. So let's try to get your question in. Call us at 888-99-CHART. We'll talk about, are you saving too much?
Good advice. Spread your money around. Stick to a well-thought-out plan for carefully divvying up your money so no single calamity will destroy your portfolio. Want to talk about it? 888-99-CHART is how to get through right now. Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. We're really close to hitting our 4 millionth InvestTalk download. Steve and Justin are pleased that you find this podcast worthwhile. Why not tell a friend and help us hit that 4 million mark? And thanks again for subscribing.
888-99-CHART. Let's talk to MS in Sunnyvale. How you doing, MS?
Hey, Steve, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a quick question on 401k. Mm-hmm. Is it a good idea to withdraw or loan, take a loan for home purchase from 401k? And is it loan is better option or withdrawal is better? I mean,
if you're going to do it, you do it through a loan, because when you withdraw it, you're going to have to pay at minimum income tax, and unless you're old enough, you'll pay 10% penalty with withdrawing it. So it depends on your age. If you are in retirement age, it'll just be added to your income, and you have to pay income tax. But if you take a loan against it and buy a property, at least there's no 10% penalty. But when you do take the loan, you have to pay it back. It's got to be an arm's length. You got to get an accountant involved. It's not that simple. It just can't just do it and think it's done. No. You got to be very, very careful, or the IRS is going to call it as a withdrawal and charge you a 10% tax and 10% penalty and add that to your income tax. You're going to have to pay income tax on that money. Is it a good idea to buy real estate at all? I don't like it personally. I don't like it because of all the rules and regulations you got to be very careful of. And I think, real estate is a very long-term investment. And, mm-hmm. you know, if you're going to leave, you know, 401k, are you going to need that money anytime soon? Or if you're not, you got to consider that. And I like to keep it liquid, but that's a personal choice of mine, MS. There's nothing wrong with using the 401k to buy an investment property or buying your home, your own personal property. There's nothing wrong with that concept at all. Just make sure you do it at arm's length involving an accountant so you do it right. Okay.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Hey, have you seen that new project called, the Hudson Yards. It's the largest private real estate development in U.S. It's on Manhattan. 17 million square feet of commercial, residential, and retail development on 28 acres, 5,000 new residents, 100 new shops, a new subway stop, a new public school, a new luxury hotel. And that first tower is going to be 52 stories. 10 Hudson Yards will be open in 2016. What's really interesting is it's being built on top of a huge railroad yard that's there. I've been to that railroad yard. They're going to build it on top of it. In other words, the railroad yard is going to be enclosed with buildings on top. Isn't that interesting? I thought it was interesting. Are you saving too much? I meet with clients, potential clients, all the time, or just people want to talk about their retirement. And I will say the vast majority of them are not saving too much. But there is a small subset that worry way, way more than they need to. Because when you start looking at the numbers, I tell them, no, you have plenty of money. You need to enjoy some of this money. You know, you're going to have way more than you need. There are people like that, believe it or not. Many times they don't consider all the benefits they have coming up in retirement. Social Security, maybe they have a pension or two. They have a lot of money saved in 401ks or IRAs. They don't understand how much money that money will produce. And they don't understand that your living expenses are going to probably be less in retirement, not more. And they don't take that in consideration. Or they worry about it so much that they're going to be poor. Excuse me. And the way to overcome this is talk to a professional like myself or somebody like me or, anybody, a financial planner, and have them work out the numbers for you. We have software that helps us. We can produce a retirement map. And you can kind of get a very good sense of how much money you're going to have in retirement and how much is it going to last you until you die. It's a numbers game. Plug in the right numbers and then play with the numbers. And, you need to be careful. You don't need to save too much. Now, that's only for a small group of you out there. Most people are not saving enough. Before we close for the hour, if you'd like to see a replay of our wealth webinar, these are hour-long, in-depth treatments of important investing concepts. The idea is to give you some good insight, to see some opportunities maybe. There's a whole library of them at investtalk.com. You just become an InvestTalk Insider. It's free. Again, sign up at investtalk.com. I'm Portfolio Manager Steve Peasley, and for Justin Klein, everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and we'll do this again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.